career sucks.
Sex just isn't the same.
What's my purpose?
Where did this fat come from?
My relationship is killing me.
I'll never be happy.
My debt is piling up. I'll never find love. Why can't I be like other gay guys? Hey guys, it's time to get a grip, stop whining, make a bold move, and do something amazing with your 40 plus gay life. Let's get to the show with your Tell It Like It Is host, Rick Clemons, who does his best to never act like a dick or a diva unless you act like one first.
So there's something interesting that happens, guys of the 40 plus world. First of all, welcome to another podcast. Welcome to a new year. I know it's middle of March, but hey, it's still kind of new. We're probably all going, where's the year going already? But there's something interesting that happens as we grow through our gay lives. We tend to lose some sense of belonging. Maybe we came out and we felt like, okay, I'm newly out and wow, I feel really like I'm belonging in the newly out crowd. And now I'm belonging in the gay community. But then we start to age. Yes, we're all aging and we get in our careers and everything. And then we may get in a career. We're like, oh, I don't know if I really fit here. Or maybe I'm going to switch careers. But boy, that can be kind of scary too. And all I hear a majority of the time in my coaching these days is I just can't seem to find where I belong. Whether it is career, friendships, relationships, maybe it's in your own family still. Well, I happen to have the distinct honor of being on my guest podcast not long ago, and we had such a good conversation. I said, let me return the favor. His name is Justin Reinert, and he has a great book about belonging. It's called Creating Belonging, A Practical Guide to Accelerate It in Your Organizations and Communities. And the more I talked with him, the more I realized we're going to do this. We're going to bring this over since there is such a deficit of feeling like you belong. So Justin, I'm very happy that you're here, and here we are, March. Oh my gosh, where is the time going already, man?
Thank you.
I wish I could lose weight as fast as I lose days of the year, right? You know?
I was just in the bookstore and I was seeing like books about losing weight, and I was like, should I pick one of those up? I'm like, no. No, I'm trying forever. We're going to happen.
Yeah. Well, no, I did really good last year. I lost 40 pounds. I'm still on that. Yeah, and I'm not having to do a whole lot. I'm just being a little conscious. And you know, my body has changed. I mean, I think that's part of it too. Like, well, where do I belong if I'm like a really super fitness guy and everybody else is kind of like, I don't have time for that. I'm old, which I hate. I don't like saying I'm old, but I'm older. I'm an elder. I'm 60. I'm a little bit of an elder at this stage, but so belonging. I mean, I know we talked a lot about this on your podcast, but some of those people didn't hear that, even though I promoted it. So, what drove you to realize I want to write a book about this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, thinking of the start of Creating Belonging. So, I've worked in the realm of, you know, corporate learning for 20 years and, you know, by knock on effect, you know, have been working in DEIB for just about as long. I mean, back then it was just called diversity. And then we started adding in more letters into that DEIB alphabet. And it was a few years ago let me rewind. 5 or 6 years ago, I had started composing a speaking proposal to a well-known LGBTQ workplace annual conference. I won't name any in particular, but there's not many. Right. And I was denied 2 years in a row. And one of the times I was denied, I was given the explanation that I didn't work for a big enough company. Like, I'm like, wow, that's an interesting reason for excluding someone. Like, it's not that my topic sucked, it's that I didn't work for the right company. And so anyway, that speaking proposal sat on the shelf and hung out for a while. Mm-hmm. And I say in the end of the book, I'm like, everything needs its time to grow. And so it wasn't its time to mature yet. And that's okay. And so then fast forward a couple of years, and a dear friend of mine who does talent development for a private equity firm reached out and said, hey, do you know anyone who would want to speak for an LGBT ERG within our portfolio? Mm. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, me?
Of course.
And so I started, I pulled the, that, speaking proposal off the shelf. I'm like, this is what I'm going to bring back to life. And so I started working on it. And I don't know, over the course of a few weeks, I don't know if you ever do this, but like I'll wake up in the middle of the night with an idea and then I can't go back to sleep.
And all so the time.
Yeah, I woke up at like 2 a.m. and I'm thinking about the speaking proposal, and this like model came into my head. And so I got up and I just started writing, handwriting, and like drawing the model out and labeling parts of the model and defining these parts of the model. And the definitions that I wrote that night are actually the definitions that are in the book today. And so it turned into this idea that of belonging being created at the intersection of authenticity and acceptance. And so then I emailed my friend the next day and I'm like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Like this speaking proposal or this, you know, speaking game I'm going to do, I think it's a book. She's like, oh, that's amazing. And so I took 9 months to write the book, published the first edition in May of 2022. And I'm actually currently working on the second edition right now.
Awesome, man. It's such an interesting thing when we have these moments of, you know, inspiration and truth, and we see something and then it becomes this other thing. And I think sometimes for guys in our community, they don't allow those intuitive hits to help drive them, or that curiosity to stay awakened and go figure it out, because we're so accustomed to like, oh no, that won't work. Or no, that could not, I could never do that. You know, our negative self-talk jumps in so quickly sometimes. I love hearing that you're like, okay, well, let's go see where this goes and let's go figure it out. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't like wave a magic rainbow wand and poof, there it was. But, right. You know, 9 months of writing, I've been there, man. Been there. My last book, it's been a labor of 3 years of love, of trying to get it written and stopping and getting it written and stopping. And now I'm in the labor of love of trying to get a publisher and stopping and... Well, yeah. We'll see. Maybe by the time this one actually airs, it might be in that hands, but knock on wood. But I also feel like that sort of direction can be the impetus for when you don't feel like you belong to not give up. If you feel like you can't find where you belong or what belonging means to you, I often, and you know, I'm going to kind of play off of some of the stuff that we talked about when we did your podcast. I feel like a sense of belonging starts with ourselves. Mm-hmm. If we don't feel like we belong, it's going to be really hard to go step into places where we do belong, because we have this shadow hanging over us, so to speak. So yeah. In your own world, I'm curious, maybe you could share a time that you felt like you didn't belong.
Wow. Yeah. Lots of time in my life. I mean, I think, you know, what's interesting, 2 years on with this book and examining the second edition, I have been doing a lot of reflecting of like what drove me to write it, like what psychologically is underneath all of this. It's actually really scary, and I don't love pulling all of that back that often. But I think that, you know, I grew up in a small town in rural Iowa, and that comes, like, there's a lot of the conversation around my journey of belonging starts there. And it was being in a small town in Iowa, queer kid, not really understanding, you know, what it was to be gay, because I think when you don't, you know, this is in the 80s, early 90s, yep. there's not really role models. Will and Grace weren't on TV yet. You know, I just thought like I needed to, you know, I would eventually find a woman and have a house with a white picket fence. And that's just what you do.
Yep.
But I still just didn't fit in. I didn't belong. And so I think my whole life has been a journey of finding it, looking for it, not necessarily finding it, looking for it. And it was definitely in my gay and queer circles that I found more comfort. And that's the interesting thing that I've been playing with a bit is, you know, part of the idea of the book is like, how do we in organizations create belonging for everyone? But at the same time, it's hard when you don't have similarities there, like if you're the only one that is, something else in that group, it's kind of hard to find that belonging. There was, a good friend of mine, a trans individual, who said that she, it was, she just thought she was the lone crazy person, the only person who thought she was this crazy until she found other trans people. And so I think we, as gay men, we take time to find people that we're like, oh, they're all like me and we're all okay. So I don't know if
But
that's
that's hard. That's
true.
hard, Justin, because I think just think of our, okay, let's just think of our own coming out process. Prior to coming out, well, actually, those first thoughts of, okay, something's different. Not gonna have to say wrong. Something's different. And a lot of us did probably say, something's wrong with me, right? Why am I not like, why are everybody else dating and into girls, all this sort of stuff? And so when those first moments hit, it's really hard to see anything beyond that. And so then, as we start to move through the experience and we do come out on the other side, there's a whole lot of stuff that's been layered on top of that because it's actually all been centered in, ironically, a sense of wanting to belong. Every bit of it. Like whether it's a, okay, well, I can't belong in my church anymore because they say I'm going to hell. I can't belong in my friendships because they're like, you're weird. You like guys, not girls. I mean, and all this sort of stuff. And of course, it depends on how we're socialized, what our environments were. But I have found as I've worked with a lot of guys over the years, it carries forward. I can have a guy who's ultra confident in one part of his life, and that sense of belonging can be really powerful for him. But in a whole other area of life, it does not exist. He doesn't have a clue how to do it, And it's interesting because I think a lot of gay men compensate. I'm not going to say overcompensate, but compensate by becoming uber successful. But then they, because if success brings a certain sense of belonging, but then the other stuff is missing. And so all of this is, kind of to your point of not only are you talking about doing this in organizations, but doing it with other people. Because as soon as we can see, oh, they're just like me. In fact, I just had this happen with one of my teammates not long ago. I could really sense this individual wasn't feeling like they were part, I shouldn't say part of the team, but there was definitely like they were trying to figure out where they fit in. And so I finally, in one of our one-on-ones, I said, can I just be kind of candid about something right now? And I knew I had to like walk gingerly into it as a manager. And we had a really beautiful conversation because this person was like, yeah, I can't say that I don't feel like I fit in, but I don't know that I fit in a way that feels right for me. And we ended up having a really powerful conversation about that. And I challenged this person like, can you, before our next one-on-one, can you like describe this to me? What would make you, because I mean, we're a very cool company. I mean, I'm going to just say the company I work for is actually pretty amazing. But that's one of the reasons I think we're really amazing. Like, hey, I would love for you to share what it would look like for you, if it did feel more comfortable or you did feel like there's more belonging. So as you have started to work and present this, and I know a lot of stuff operates rights around, DEIB and all that sort of stuff. What have you found to be one of the key things that moves the needle on people feeling like there's a sense of belonging?
I think it's when number one, the key that I keep coming back to is when we feel like we can be most ourselves. And without fear of being judged for whoever that is. And that shows up, the validation that I get from that and where I'm getting it from other people is I hear so many themes of representation where people gravitate to an organization or to a group because there's something there that speaks to them in their individuality that they can go be themselves with those people. So it is, there's signals that we send to other people that, show that we're willing to let other people be themselves. And that's you know, the simplicity of the model of creating belonging. It's that balance of authenticity and acceptance. And they balance each other. And for ourselves, authenticity has to come first. But the way that then groups create belonging is by showing that acceptance that you can be yourself. Yeah,
that's huge. So, because I think that's the thing, is the group can feed off of itself.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that made me feel most okay, so this is, we're going clear back to 1999. I say that like it's like, oh my god, that's the Stone Age, but it's, you know, it's a few years ago now. And as I came out of the closet, married to a woman, two kids, working in a high level corporate space, the sense of belonging was so high in that organization because it was welcoming. And I'm talking 1999. I mean, you know, LGBTQ stuff was still kind of like, yeah, okay, we're starting to step forward. A little bit of Ellen DeGeneres had happened by then, and, you know, more things were starting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But because there was such a prevalence of LGBTQ representation within the company, I can't help but think that that was, well, I know that was part of the reason I finally came out, because I was going on, you know, business trips with a lot of people, hanging out with, I always ended up hanging out with the gays and lesbians in the group, right? Even though I was the straight guy, you know, and I played it off pretty well. Like, ah, sure, I'll go with you guys. You know, I'm not like going to go, I didn't want to go to the titty bars. That was for sure. Even though I did go a couple of times, just like, okay, I got to do this or somebody's going to know something, right? But it did create that safety for me to feel like, okay, I can do this. And I don't know that if it had been somewhere else, I would have followed through. So I think that's part of this comfort and sense of belonging that gets created within a group that really helps us move forward. In your own circles, do you see this? Because one of the things that comes up the most, I kind of alluded to this in the opening of the show, a lot of gay men still really struggle with feeling like they belong. They're like trying to find where they land. Do you see this in your circles?
Okay. So I'm going to start with, I'm very fortunate to live in a city that is very, you know, I live in Chicago, and there are still plenty of gay establishments. You know, there are spaces, and, you know, I've been here for 18 years. So like my roots go deep.
Yeah.
So I think though, where the struggle comes in is that there were spaces 20, 30 years ago in smaller communities that don't exist today. So one example, I remember when I left Iowa, I was living in Des Moines. And so Des Moines, Iowa was a large part of my coming out and like finding belonging with other gay people. And so, you know, there was this one bar in gay bar in Des Moines called The Garden. And I remember when I first started going, like every Friday and Saturday night, just like super packed to the gills. And this was not a small bar. And it was also, I think at the time, was like winning, like, you know, city readers, like top bars for music, top dance club, whatever. And I didn't actually live, from the time I came out and was going there from like 21 until I moved to Chicago at what, the age of 26. So in the span of 5 years, I'll never forget my last night in Chicago was like probably August 19th of 2006. My last night in Des Moines, moving to Chicago. I went out to the bar and it was so dead for a Saturday night, like super, super dead. And so I asked one of the bartenders, I was like, hey, what's going on? Like, this is nothing like what it was when I first came out. And again, that was like 5 years prior.
Right.
And he said, things are changing. Like, it's not like gay people aren't as excluded. And so there's cooler bars to go. And so the younger people are going to the cooler bars. And so since then, you've seen, there's articles about the disappearance of these gay bars in so many places.
Yep.
And not that the bar is the only social place, like, and that you have to drink to be gay, but for many years, from, you know, the 60s through the early 2000s, I would say, for many cities, you know, even as small as Des Moines was back then, like the gay bar was where you had community and where you found belonging and you found your chosen family. And so people who don't have the, I don't know if privilege is the right word for it, but people who don't live in a larger city that still has protected those spaces, they don't have an outlet to go find people. And so the next outlet is online.
Yep.
I think that was also the downfall of the small town bars is like, I don't want to go out in public. It's easier. I can just go on gay.com do my thing. And so I think that's where it's at, because I literally today was just doing research on authenticity and then was getting into loneliness and loneliness for LGBT individuals, like elderly, like, and how there's just not spaces for them to create community, and online's not going to do it. Like it can feign it a little bit, but if you're still sitting alone in your house on your phone, it's still loneliness. So,
well, absolutely. And it's always tied together. I mean, those two things go together. And I saw it specifically happen as the pandemic set in, because I had just launched this podcast. It was a different name at the time, but I started immediately having like some Zoom calls, like, hey, if you're part of the podcast, you listen to it, hey, join us on, you know, these nights and we'll do community since we're all kind of holed up in our houses, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I started really sensing that, you know, well, first I started really sensing my own privilege, number one, because I had a husband. So I wasn't sitting there alone, but I started seeing that sense of loneliness. And, you know, there were guys that would show up and then they didn't show up again. And then they would show up maybe, you know, a month later at the call again. And then, and so I finally asked a couple, I'm like, hey, you okay? I want to make sure you're good. And one of them flat out told me, I don't know that I really fit with your people who are on the call. I'm like, okay, that's totally understandable. Not sure what was said. I asked, and he goes, I can't really put my finger on it. I just don't feel like they're my people. I'm like, well, that would be the same if you walked into a gay bar. You could either say, oh, this is my people, it's not my people. You could do it if you joined a softball league or you went, you know, there's so many things. But I think you're right, Justin, because there is like this sense of things have disappeared. We live in a very small town on the central coast of California, and there's community, but it's skewed towards the younger generation.
Mm-hmm.
We know there is community here because we've seen it online, but also we have witnessed it firsthand. So Cal Poly University is here in San Luis Obispo where I live. And we've been over the last few months going to some of the performances. David Sedaris, all the queers were there, so to speak, right? Jane Lynch at Christmas time did her holiday blues singing thing. All the gays were there. And of course, we're standing there going, where are all these people? What? We can't find these people. You know, a few people we knew and like, okay, you know, they introduced us to a few people, but it's very interesting when there isn't a centralized, you know, we used to run a meetup. Actually, when we moved here, we took over running a meetup for LGBTQ, and it was really great. We kind of got known in the community. And then of course pandemic hit and that kind of went away. And I'm like, I'm tired of running it anyway. I did it for almost 2 years. I'm kind of like, not that it takes a huge amount of planning, but you're putting in some planning on a really regular basis. And I think that's the piece that I think people are hungering for right now is how do I feel that sense of belonging? And then if we take it to what the work you really do, you go into organizations and as an LGBTQ person, man, that's even harder to find that sense of belonging. If you feel like I'm the only gay boy, which I was for a while in the company I now work for, I was like, okay, I'm like the only one in the LGBTQ community in this company. And that was kind of an interesting space to play, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say there's a company that I used to work for, and I had a microphone. So, you know, figuratively, so I could, you know, speak up when I saw things. And there were just a lot of things that happened in the organization that were exclusive to many others, including, you know, gay, queer identifying people. And so it got to the point where I would speak up and I'd say, hey, here's something I'm seeing that isn't right. We need to think about this as we're, you know, planning events or doing whatever. And then I started getting, and I wouldn't even call it gaslit, but just like, you know, this SVP that I would talk to, I would be like, Justin, you're not the only gay in the village. We know that there's other gay people here and nobody else is complaining. And I'm like, I have a microphone though. Like they don't necessarily feel like they have a voice.
Right.
And like, I feel like I have enough footing that I can speak up.
Yep.
And not that I want to say I'm speaking on behalf of anyone, but I don't think that this is right. And so I think there is that, like, the challenge of even when you are the one to speak up as like the only gay in the village, it's like, well, it's just whatever. They just complain. I'm like, no, I'm not complaining a lot. I'm trying to right some injustices that I see here.
Right. Well, I'm not going to couch this in an injustice, but it's an interesting situation that happened at the holidays. So my company's 100% virtual. There is no office. I mean, okay, the owner, yeah, I'm sure he has some kind of little bit of an office in Nashville where everything's based. But this company has grown from basically zero to what it is today, 40 some people, and it's all virtual. And so the only time we gather is once a year, we get together at a company retreat. And the other time is once a month we get together. Well, it was twice a month. Now it's once a month. We get together on a Zoom call. And so at the holidays, they always do like the last one before Christmas is always like, we're going to do our holiday kind of like Zoom call. Everybody wear your ugly Christmas sweaters, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I'm always like, I don't want to do the ugly Christmas sweater thing. But then, of course, as it gets closer, I'm like, bitch, I'm going to win this thing. I'm going to win this contest, right? Well, last year I did. Last year I was like, I came as the leftover wrapping paper sweater. And I mean, it was all the wrapping paper, all the ribbon, like there was broken cookies on it. I mean, it was like, I mean, I worked, you know, I worked as hard as any drag queen did on their outfit. Let's just say that, right? So this year rolls around and I'm like, I really am not feeling it. You know, I'm just not feeling it this year. And I'm like, well, I've got a red and black plaid shirt. I'll just wear a black that shirt. And I'm on with my boss prior to us going on that call. We were doing our one-on-one and she's like, okay, I got to go. I got to get my sweater on. I know you got to get your outfit on. I'm like, I'm not doing anything. She goes, oh, come on. You got to do something. I'm like, I know. I'm like, it's 5 minutes away. I'm going to wear the plaid shirt I have on. That's it. Oh, well, my husband had some stuff downstairs that he hadn't got wrapped up yet for his team. And he had some ribbons and some bows. And I'm like, well, okay, I could just go get some of those frilly bows and like stick them like, you know, on the shoulders and, you know, and do something. And then I got downstairs and I forgot we had a whole bunch of gold like beads that we hadn't put on the tree yet. So I wrapped the beads all around. I had like this lovely beaded, you know, gold necklace and epaulets. And then I just took one of the ribbons and like put it right here on my bald head. Okay, so I show up. Everybody's like, oh my God, we knew Rick would do that, right? I then get this message from one of the guys. I'm so glad you did drag for the company meeting. I'm like, I did not do drag for the company meeting. I just showed up. But it was interesting, again, that to see where I came into this company. Like, mm-hmm. I'm the only, quote, gay guy, you know, gay person on the team. To where it created that sense of belonging. And lots of things have changed through the years. And there's, you know, another gay guy on the team now. And, you know, just there's sense of belonging stuff that has happened, but not everybody gets that. Not everybody gets that sense. And it's really tough. So if somebody's really struggling with that, not just because they're gay, but if they're really struggling with it, what is something you try to take organizations or, you know, as you do your talks, what is it you try to help people do to kind of start to create that sense of belonging?
I think, so the first thing, like when there are issues, mm-hmm. I think because people, have blinders on.
Yes.
And or are washing everyone in their values. And probably very narrow values. And so the first thing is just to start to create some awareness that that the way that you see the world is not the only way of seeing the world, and other people exist. And it's, you know, I feel like the last 10 years of my life has been a very intense pulling back of my own blinders, because, you know, while I'm a queer kid who grew up in in Northwest Iowa, I still grew up in Northwest Iowa. So everyone still looked like me. And, you know, like religious diversity to us was whether you were Catholic or Baptist, right?
Right.
That was it. And so as I navigated into larger cities, like increasingly larger, from, you know, I moved to Ames, Iowa. I thought that was such a big town because I could like get a FedEx package picked up the same day and then walk down the street to Subway. It was so amazing. And then I moved to Des Moines, and then I moved to Chicago. And so I've just constantly been faced with new and difference. And just in the past, I mean, I've really focused on it in the past 5 years of just raising that awareness of understanding how all the ways that people are different, so that I can be cognizant of making sure that I do things intentionally to make them feel like they belong around me. Because I would say as recently as 5 or 10 years ago, I've done unintentionally destructive things for others. And so, I don't know, part of this work, like I said, there's a lot of psychology that sits underneath why I do this work. But part of it is just like healing myself, like trying to find a way of like, of digging out some of the wrong that I've done in the world. So back to the point, how do we do that? We do that by raising our awareness of all the ways that people are different and understanding that other people's truths are their truths. Just because they describe a lived experience that's different from ours doesn't mean that it's inaccurate. It's their truth. It's what they live. And so we need to listen to them, hear them, understand, and try to understand them. And so that's, I think, the first major step. If people can just stop for a second, pull back the blinders, and like suspend your own values for just a second. And I'm not saying abandon all morality, but suspend your values for just a moment to try to think about how someone else might see the world.
Yep. Well, it's about seeing them in their own, you know, seeing somebody else in their shoes. It's pretty simple.
Yes. So. Yes.
Well, Justin, I'm excited that you got second edition coming out. That's awesome. I'm so glad that you gave us some time to bring this in, because I think this conversation is really great for guys of any age that are gay, but especially 40s. You kind of start making some moves in your careers, and you make some moves around relationships, and things start to happen. And then, as you said, the world has changed in how we gather together. Mm-hmm. And it's always a pathway towards, how do I continue to feel like I belong? Even if that's just belonging to a small circle or a larger circle of work, or it could be, I want to be the social butterfly of wherever. And we move, we change careers, we change relationships, all these sort of things. And then suddenly we're like, I'm kind of at a loss how to do it. And what I always encourage guys to think through is, when did you do this before and what did you do?
Mm.
Because it's not that different. Mm-hmm. It may be a different scenario. It may be different people. It may be a different situation at work. I mean, I have many guys who are really excited to move their career up the ladder. And then suddenly, as soon as they do, they're like, I don't feel like I belong. I sure don't belong with who I was with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not quite sure I belong yet in the circle that I'm now with. Mm-hmm. And it depends on what the move is. You know, if it's a definite up the ladder, you know, you went from being a team member to a manager, or manager to a director, or director to, you know, a C-suite sort of position, there's a lot of shifting. And I don't think anybody would say, oh yeah, it was so easy. No, I'm going to call bullshit on those thoughts, because it's like, I remember when I was making some of those big moves, I'm like, okay, well now here I am, I'm playing with the big boys, and I'm not really enjoying playing with the big boys, but I love the position I was in. So I had to find my way of belonging with the big boys, yet still maintaining my own authentic self. And I think those are the beautiful things, that we cross those roads a lot when we move and groove in our world. So, but I so appreciate you, man, taking time to come and talk and dropping some wisdom bombs. And the book, again, give it a shout out so that the guys remember. And if they want to get a copy, tell them where they can get it.
Yes. The title is Creating Belonging, A Practical Guide to Accelerate Belonging in Organizations and Communities. Right now, you can get it in paperback and Kindle on Amazon.
Awesome.
Once we publish the second edition, it's going to be more widely available, and you should be able to get it just about anywhere.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's so exciting. It's always exciting. Of course, it's like birthing a new child, even if it's like just second edition. It's like, okay, here we go again, because all the rewrites and, okay, now what are we doing different? Is the cover going to be the same? Is it not going to be the same? Is it going to, you know, there's just all, I know. I mean, I'm in that birth canal right now too, so I totally get it. But
it's almost harder because I'm like reading it again and it's in the state that I left it that I thought was okay to publish. Right. And so I'm like reading it. I'm like, yeah, this is good enough. but no, I'm doing a second edition because I know there's more that needs to be added. But
right.
So we'll get there. It's a fun process.
I'm sure it is. Well, again, thank you, man, so much for being here and sharing with all the 40 plus listeners. And guys, if you want to reach out, all the information to connect with Justin will also be on our show page on the website. And again, I just really appreciate you being part of our world and sharing with my people. So thanks so much, Justin.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
That's a wrap for 40 plus. Gay men, gay talk, where size doesn't matter. We drop our bullshit, get over our screwed up fears, make bold moves, and live life without apologies. Don't forget to join us on Facebook at 40 plus. Gay men, gay talk, where the conversations continue.